The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
I think by October, we're going to see all of these theaters, maybe even earlier, up and running, and we're going to see the restaurants will then start to come to life and will not be more than just open. They'll be full and people on the streets, and it's all going to build with greater momentum as the season goes on.
Hi, everybody. I'm Fran Spielman. My guest this week is Chicago's Cultural Affairs and Special Events Commissioner, Mark Kelly. Mark, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Fran.
You came to the city from a top job as Vice President of Student Affairs at Columbia College, where you once ripped your shirt open in excitement at a student rally. Before we get started, tell me about how that happened and how you managed to get so caught up in the moment that you really showed your school spirit.
Well, as the vice president of students at Columbia College, I took great pride in being very connected to students. In fact, I think it's fair to say that the far majority of the students knew who I was, and with a student body then of over 10,000, that's I think quite a statement, and that's because I was building a culture for students. So how do you take an urban arts campus and how do you make it come to life for students? Everything from the Wabash Arts Corridor with the giant murals that mark the South Loop to manifest the Creative Arts Festival where students showed their body of work. That was simply an event where the new manifest t-shirt designed by a student arrived. I crouched behind the podium, took off my shirt, put on my manifest t-shirt, and then stood back up and proudly said, "Now, I'm ready for what's coming." So it's always about the students and their work and celebrating their work.
I love it. I love it. It shows your spirit and the heart that you have beating under that shirt. It must have been a heartbreak for you to preside over this department during this past year, when the entertainment and cultural landscape of Chicago has been devastated by this pandemic.
Well, you're right, Fran. It has been heartbreak. It's been heartbreak for the city, and in particular for the arts and culture landscape. Of all the industries, and let me emphasize, this is an industry. Of all the industries impacted by the pandemic, none has been harder hit than the arts and culture landscape of this city. All of our stages are dark. There have been some museums that have been at, working at about a 25% capacity, but largely the entire landscape has been closed down, and artists unemployed, our dancers, our performers of all sorts, and it's been really tough. And I just want to remind everyone, this is an industry. We had 58 million tourists coming to Chicago in 2019. They spent over $16 billion, and they were coming to this vital city and the cultural life of this city, the theaters, the public art, the music, the nightlife, the architecture. This is why Chicago beckons, and it's all centered in cultural work. So yeah, it's been really tough.
And what is it going to take to rebuild and reopen what I consider to be the beating heart of Chicago, and you do too, the music clubs, the theaters, downtown and in the neighborhoods. They make Chicago such a great place to live, to work, to visit.
Well, there, I have no doubt that once as the pandemic restrictions begin to lift, and they will, and I think they will very soon, I'm convinced that our audience is not going to be cautious. They are going to come running back to this beating life of the city. And so part of it is just the reopening, allowing our stages to reopen. But then they need support. And so the Arts 77 announcement was part of that support, sort of kickstarting the bringing back the energy, the support and resources to help this vital part of the city come to life, both economically and then the joy it brings to all of us, the sense of belonging it brings to all of us. And in Art 77, that announcement is just the beginning. It hardly gets to the depth of the challenge for the arts and cultural landscape, but it gets us started, and then we're going to do everything we can to find additional resources so we can help this recovery for the arts industry.
So Art 77 is this $60 million commitment for artists and concerts and public art at O'Hare. Tell our listeners what this is and what will it do and how far it goes.
Well, first of all, this $60 million represents a new direction for Chicago's cultural policy, where arts are now embedded in initiatives and strategies across city departments. So this is not just the work of DCASE, this is the work of the city, and so the Chicago Park District, Chicago Public Libraries, the Chicago Planning Department, the Department of Transportation are our partners, our allies, working together, and then bringing together new resources that we've never seen. So this announcement is unprecedented in its scope, $60 million. And just a quick breakdown of what the scope of that is. First of all, we will have public art will now be brought to the neighborhoods of Chicago. So $15 million in public art investment. It's going to be over the next 5 years, so $3 million a year. And to give your audience a sense of perspective, our budget for public art has been about $100,000, and that was just for conservation. And then in addition, we have some percent for art ordinance work, where public art for a new library and such. But this is $3 million a year. The focus is our neighborhoods, and it'll be hiring artists and all the other work that goes with it and bringing joy to our neighborhoods. We have another $3.5 million working with the aviation and the remake of the international terminal. We'll be selecting the work of about 30 artists, the biggest acquisition of Chicago artists' work in decades, so that rather soulless structure in the past will pop with great public art as you go through that terminal. We have a lot of programs, grant programs, that are in play immediately so that we can start employing artists and start bringing life back to the city. So we have the Chicago Presents program, which is over $1 million dedicated to free cultural performances across the city starting in July and going through the fall. So this will be theater, music, and dance. It'll be in our parks, our plazas, and it's a rather simple process to apply. We'll have the Neighborhood Access Program, $1 million invested on the south and west side to bring more cultural vitality. We have our band roster. So this is the year of Chicago music, and we just published a curated list of 200 bands across the spectrum of music. And then we will pay for them. And if any producers want to bring them in to any presentations. And then we have Culture in My Neighborhood, which is a $40 million investment animating the Chicago Park District cultural centers and linking them up with the Chicago Cultural Center downtown and the regional libraries of Chicago Public Library. This array of great cultural resources, many of them, most of them on the south and west side, but they've languished. We have 11 auditoriums that are going to be returned to their splendor when they were built decades and decades ago and modernized so that they can be living spaces for cultural presentation. So these are just, you know, there's more to say, but that just gives the audience a sense of what's going to be happening under the Arts 77 umbrella.
But your budget was cut in half during the pandemic. You had your people working on all kinds of pandemic response things. Don't the aldermen need to provide corporate fund support going forward for your department, which is really so important to the city?
Well, I'm not going to argue against any additional support, and I think the DCASE budget, you're correct, it was cut by 50%, and at the same time, DCASE played a crucial role in helping the city deal with the pandemic, because we have such a talented staff with so many skill sets that are of value to the city. But we're now all back at it as we work on arts recovery. And it helped us be more nimble and thoughtful. How do you support arts recovery when your budget's cut 50%? You partly do that by looking to these partnerships. So this is the first time where public art is in the infrastructure budget, the capital budget of the city. It never happened before. Our partnership and helping support and push through this capital investment for the cultural centers in the Chicago Park District. And I can tell you there's going to be more resources coming our way with the American Rescue Plan. You know, we'll have to see what that number is, but I'm confident it's going to be significant support. And so DCASE is coming out of this, even though, you know, it was a tough beginning of the year. I've never seen a more energized, focused staff delivering the goods, if you will, to our citizens.
So what about the prospects for Taste of Chicago and the Air and Water Show? There wasn't money in the budget for it. Will you have enough to put those events on, and can we do it?
So we will be making an announcement on that in the next week or so, but you're correct. There wasn't, it wasn't in our budget because of the cuts. But I can only say this, that there will be some very cool summer programs going forward.
And won't
we'll be
those two
next week.
Won't those two happen? And don't we need them to happen to really celebrate the reopening that we have waited so long for?
Well, whether it's going to be those events or they're equal, but you're right. We absolutely need to get the public realm animated, and we need to bring people out in the streets and as much as possible bring them together. So we have still the pandemic challenges, we have some of the budget challenges, but with the announcement next week, we will get, the city is going to get excited as it starts to come together in larger and larger numbers in festival-like settings.
Yeah, don't we need to let loose, you know, foot loose, dance in the streets like they did on VJ Day and VE Day and the end of the wars and so on? Don't we really need to celebrate?
We do need to celebrate. We need to do it in a smart way. And I have no doubt that Mayor Lightfoot and our public health department are going to be laying out the paths to do that. But with that, I believe that by late summer, we're going to be in a dramatically different situation. And we will be coming together in far, far greater numbers and with confidence and with comfort. And we'll have sweat on our brow as we're feeling the energy on a stage or a cultural event just bringing us together.
Yeah, with 2 million doses already administered and health metrics improving, the mayor is announcing today that Chicago is opening a little bit more, this time to let restaurants and theaters serve more patrons, allow fans inside the United Center for the first time. These new rules will allow a bunch of different things, 25% capacity at Wrigley and Guaranteed Rate and Soldier Field. They'll be in the United Center, meetings and conferences, et cetera. So, and restaurants can be 50% capacity or 100 people. So what will all this do and what does it mean to an event like Lollapalooza? Everybody wants to know, will that happen? I mean, you've been talking to the organizers, so will that happen?
You know, I surely don't have that answer for that. And it's a big question, but every day I think there becomes a greater likelihood that something like Lollapalooza could come forward. You know, we'll have to wait and see. But, and this is the state is looking at this vaccination pass, you know, so my gosh, that could be a game changer where it could be encouraging, especially young people to get their vaccination, and with their card, you know, they could easily enter a festival and congregate in great numbers. So, you know, we'll have to see. It's surely out of my bailiwick to make that decision, but I will tell you, I am eager for that day, and we're gonna do everything we can to help support festival organizers as the new rules evolve and change, and maybe change quickly. We permit all the special events, and we will be ready to work with everyone in lightning speed to get their permits and to move forward into the more vital public moment.
Well, let's talk about the Vax Pass that Chicago is planning to do. The mayor said it could involve preferred seating, preferred admission. How exactly could that work? You need to work with concert promoters and venue owners. Have you talked to them? And if you're doing that, it sounds like Lollapalooza is going to happen, but Lollapalooza is one of these events that you have stages in different places. You have people dancing and elbowing each other in front of the stages. How would it work safely in an event like Lollapalooza where young people really throw caution to the wind?
Well, you know, that's a question. It's a great question. It's a great question that's a little bit out of my expertise. And so I'll be looking to public health to help guide us. And as I understand it, the vaccination passes would be a state initiative, and they would provide the guidance. But I believe the thinking is that possibly, let's say there's a festival and they require the vaccination pass, and there's a mechanism to do that, that you could then have a festival, a safe festival, for everyone with a VAC pass, and it could be people packed together, and it would be a safe event. Again, I'm not the expert on that, and it wouldn't be my call, but I'm excited about the possibility, and I think our festival organizers, and yes, if those operational plans move forward, then we're going to be pulling together our clubs, our venues, our festival presenters to help them understand the path and how they move forward.
So it would be an event with no restrictions. If you can get these young people who are not being vaccinated at great numbers to be vaccinated, would they be able to stand elbow to elbow in Grand Park the way they always do at Lollapalooza?
You know, again, Fran, I want to be very cautious with my answer because I'm not the expert on this, but my understanding is that's a distinct possibility and an exciting one.
And how do you incentivize these kids other than just saying you can get into Lollapalooza? Is that enough of an incentive, or do you have to give them free admission? Do you have to give them half price admission? Do you have to put them up front? How do you do that and convince these young people who think they're going to live forever and are going to be healthy forever that they need to get the vaccine?
Well, it's my understanding there's going to be a national campaign. There is a state campaign, a city campaign, all to make sure that our vaccination rates are at the highest level, and that's going to be encouraging people in all kinds of different ways. Part of it is advocacy and clever marketing. Part of it may be, hey, if I want to go to Lollapalooza, if I want to go to this club, if I want to be in this theater, I have to show my pass. So could this be an important motivator for everyone to get vaccinated so that we all can be safe and comfortable in the public realm?
What about July 3rd fireworks in the air and water show? You had no money in your budget for these events. You were hoping for federal stimulus money that would allow you to put these on. Will they happen?
Fran, you'll just have to wait till next week when we're going to make our announcements about what will happen this summer. I can only say it's going to be exciting. I will point out, we've never managed fireworks. That is Navy Pier, and how exciting. I believe the first fireworks show is coming up. Is it this weekend, or it's very soon? So all of these are necessary steps to bring us back into a full public life.
Steppenwolf Theater announced today that it's returning to live productions in November and showcasing its $54 million theater, but places like the Royal George have been lost. What is it going to take to convince people to return to some of these tiny neighborhood theaters?
You know, Chris Jones just had a column about this, I think it was a couple days ago, and I agree with him. I think that as soon as tickets go on sale at these theaters, you're going to see a gold rush. I don't think it's going to be hard to convince theater patrons to get back into theater seats. They're desperate too, and they're excited. And here's something else. I'll bet that this time of this furlough, if you will, for the theater community, the work that we're going to see as we come back is going to be extraordinary. That artists weren't just sitting at home waiting; they were thinking, they were imagining, and that work is going to be on our stages. It's going to be in the work of our visual artists, and it's going to beckon our audience. So I'll bet Chris Jones is right that if Steppenwolf puts out its schedule and you can buy tickets, they're going to go fast and furious.
And Broadway, of course, has been dark for over a year. So have Chicago's downtown theaters. How does a major downtown production work financially when seating capacity is limited? Don't they need a certain number of sellouts a week just to break even with all the costs of production?
Well, I believe Broadway in Chicago is looking at October is when they plan to reopen, and they're imagining that they don't know yet, but they're hopeful that they'll be at full capacity. And boy, do we need our Broadway in Chicago and Harris Theater and Auditorium Theater and the Goodman and all of the power of downtown Chicago, Lyric Opera, the CSO, all have been dark. And having been down here at the Cultural Center every day, you could just feel the lack of energy in this downtown area. It's not just that we don't, that a lot of the office towers are empty. It's the cultural life, especially in the evening, that has made downtown such a lively, great area. And so I think by October, we're going to see all of these theaters, maybe even earlier, up and running, and we're going to see the restaurants will then start to come to life and will be more than just open. They'll be full and people on the streets, and it's all going to build with greater momentum as the season goes on.
And you see no hesitation by the theater-going audience?
Oh, I'm sure, will there be some hesitation? Sure. But I think it's balanced and it's pushed forward because people know what they've lost. It's the heart. the heart grows fonder, right, in absence. And so I believe the audience, it becomes back stronger and more committed. That, you know, everyone's done with their Zoom calls. Everyone's done with, you know, culture on a screen. You know, it has its place, but it, none of it is equal to the living moment where an audience is connected to performance, whether it's music, whether it's theater, whether it's dance. And I personally can't wait. And I think there's a heck of a lot of people that are thinking just like I am.
And you might even rip your shirt off. You might be so excited, huh?
I probably won't do that, Fran. You know, now with my wife here, maybe some of the youthful enthusiasm of a couple of decades ago is leaving a little bit.
I'm joking.
But not my enthusiasm for the city and its arts.
Your most illustrious predecessor, Lois Weisberg, was a brilliant visionary. She gave us the beloved Cows on Parade exhibit and the award-winning arts and education program known as Gallery 37. Can you think of anything equally whimsical like Cows on Parade that might put a smile on the faces of Chicagoans who have been through so much in the last year? Lord knows we could use a good laugh.
Well, you know, I think I'll go back to Chicago Presents. So, you know, this summer, we're going to be funding free performances across the city, and there's going to be hundreds of them. And what a great, the whimsy of the moment, right? So it's not going to be a festival setting. It's not going to be overproduced, but something that none of us have seen in so long is, you know, out and about in our plazas, our streets. There'll be street closures, just the announcement of Sundays on State. There is just going to be so much energy this summer, and we're going to be helping support it. And there'll be street closures. There'll be outdoor dining. There'll be performances, and it's going to be peppered and popping up throughout the city, and it's going to be cool.
41 statues are under review. You're part of a committee doing that because of, you know, in the racial reckoning that followed the death of George Floyd. Alderman Brendan Riley has put forth an ordinance saying the city council should have the final say, not this committee that does its work in secret about which statues stay or go. What do you think of that?
Well, first of all, this is hardly a committee that is working in secret. We began with some internal meetings to get our act together. We've been very public. Our meetings are now public. And I will point out that as far as we can tell, there is no city in the country that has had a richer, broader public engagement process. In fact, we'll be having a presentation about the future of public art with several noted artists. Yesterday, there was a program by the Chicago History Museum considering Lincoln and the future of Lincoln and our imagination and how he should be presented and how we should think of him. And we've been having meetings with stakeholders. We've been having drop-in sessions. I think it's 24 community partner presentations, educational presentations. So there's nothing secret about this, and we will be making recommendations. It's an advisory committee. We'll be making recommendations about how to manage public art going forward. At the heart of the committee's recommendations will not be about subtraction. It's going to be about addition. How do we bring more public art, and how does that public art be more honest and truthful to our collective history, and how does it also get us excited and just bring the joy of public art going forward? So those recommendations will include the structure for public art, and I believe there are going to be smart, you know, best of practices from what we've learned from across the country. And so I think when Alderman Riley sees those recommendations, I think he might have a different view of how we should manage public art going forward.
So how many of those 41 statues do you think will be removed or will you recommend removal?
You know, I can't answer that because that's still under review by the committee, but I'll go back to my what I said before. This committee is very much focused more on addition and not on subtraction. We also believe that some of these works need to be a recontextualization of them, which is not necessarily removing it, but maybe there's a new work that is in conversation with the work. In some cases, it may be information, historical information that brings a broader view than what is listed. But none of those decisions have been made. And so I can only say that the committee is their broadest view is about addition and not subtraction.
Yeah, wouldn't it be better to have an explanatory plaque and saying, well, this person wasn't perfect, they also were a slave owner or whatever, but not to obliterate them, but rather to explain that this is an imperfect person who did this too?
Well, that's a compelling view. We'll have to see where, you know, finally what the recommendations are. You know, there are though some issues out there. Marquette statue on the south side, in that case, there's clearly an indigenous person who is posed as a supplicant, who is in a demeaning position. And so does something like that stand? Those are issues for the committee to wrestle with. But overall, I would agree with your comment. What we need out of this is education and understanding, and just removing doesn't necessarily bring you education and understanding. The George Washington statue on the south side in heroic pose, I think it's fair to say that when that was created, I believe that's from the 30s, if I remember correctly, but that heroic pose was without any concern that there was any other complex information. He was the father of our country, period. We now understand he was also a slave owner with over 300 slaves, and he signed the Slave Fugitive Act, and so our understanding of him changes, and so how do we bring that forth? That's the conundrum we face, and we will wrestle with.
Yeah, and if you erase history, you might be doomed to repeat it. Before we let you go, the renaming of Lakeshore Drive for DuSable. The mayor has floated her own alternative plan. She has concerns about renaming the outer drive. How do you feel about it?
You know, I don't have a position on the outer drive. I'm not close enough to that argument, but we at DCASE have been developing and will be putting forward a plan. It's still in its embryonic form, but do we agree with this, that the city has failed to recognize DuSable and Kitihawa and our understanding of Chicago and its early creation? Absolutely. And should that be at the center of the city? Absolutely. And we have some very cool, ambitious plans that take the Riverwalk. Think of it as maybe it's the DuSable Riverwalk, and then monumental, great public art centering on where his trading post was, and he was there. He was in Chicago. What became Chicago because of the intersection of the Chicago River with Lake Michigan, and to center this, but not, you know, it goes back to the bigger idea about monuments. Any monument can lose its meaning, and a monument alone or changing the name is not enough. It needs to be centered in the life of the city and our education, our youth. So we're proposing something that includes a yearly celebration of DuSable and educational material and a walking route where you become educated and connected to our history.
Mark Kelly, thank you so much for joining us. I do look forward to waving across the audience to you at the theater again in Chicago and at a concert.
There'll be sweat on our brow and a smile a smile on her face as we're feeling the bass line from great Chicago musicians. It's the year of Chicago music, and we're just feeling the mojo of the city coming to life.
And I dare say both of us will be dancing. And we will see you all next week.
Thank you, Fran.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.